Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about India's relationship with Russia. Russia is currently facing severe financial sanctions from the West, and most of these countries were export markets for Russia prior to its invasion of Ukraine. So going forward, Russia needs to find large trading partners to try to fill the gap that's going to be left in its P&L. And India is one of its main target markets. Over the course of the last 7 months, Russia has been exporting large volumes of oil to India. It's been offering large discounts to both China and India to encourage them to take these volumes. And as you'll know if you follow the channel, one of the reasons for that is that Russia needs to find a home for all of its oil, because once you've set up production facilities, you want to keep that flow going. And as they don't have any means of storage, they need to find countries who want to buy it. And India is a very large market. Over 1.4 billion people live in the country. And so it's a natural fit that Russia will want to try to develop that relationship. Now, from India's point of view, from an economic perspective, buying oil from Russia at a discount to market prices makes absolute sense, because it's one of the biggest costs that they have to pay for. But of course, the reason that the West have put all of the financial sanctions in place is to try to penalise Russia to reduce their income in an event to encourage Russia to stop the war in Ukraine. So the last thing that the West wants is for Russia to find an outlet for all of its exports in India and carry on as if nothing has happened, which would mean firstly that there's no real incentive to stop the war, and secondly that the only countries that would suffer from the sanctions would be the West themselves. So in order to avoid that eventuality, the West has to pursue what's known as secondary sanctions. So forcing countries into a situation where they don't want to deal with Russia because it will impact on their other business. And in today's episode, I want to share with you some really interesting information that's coming through from India relating to those secondary sanctions. Earlier this year, the Indian Central Bank set up new facilities to enable countries to be able to trade directly with India in rupees rather than dollars, euros or yen. And this was seen as being a big breakthrough and would help develop future relations between India and Russia. However, things haven't quite worked out as everybody was expecting. So I'll go through the details of what that scheme looks like and why it's not achieving its objectives. We'll also have a look at the current levels of trade between Russia and India. I'll talk to you about Vostro and Nostro accounts. We'll go through exactly what they are and why they're important. We'll talk about the proposed oil price cap and how that would impact on both Russia and India. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summaries to what I think is likely to happen in terms of the trade between Russia and India over the course of the next 6 to 12 months, and what the impact of that will be both on the Russian economy and the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if you don't have time to watch the whole thing, you can pick and choose what you'd like to watch. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon and Amazon shopping links. Historically, Russia and India have not been major trading partners. There has been some trade between the two countries, but it's only a relatively small percentage for both. However, as I mentioned at the start of the video, India is now a target market for Russia. And over the course of the last 7 months, we have seen a real change in the level of trading between the two nations. This chart shows the annual level of exports from India to Russia over the last 10 years. And you can see that the volume of trade dropped to a historic low in 2015, which was the year after Russia invaded Crimea and financial sanctions were imposed against many companies. But since 2015, there has been some growth in Indian exports. And in 2021, total exports equated to around $3.3 billion and represented less than 1% of India's total exports. Now, this chart shows the amount of Indian imports directly from Russia. And it's interesting to note that in 2018, 19 and 20, there was actually a reduction in the amount India was importing from Russia. However, due to the global increase in the demand for oil in 2021, Russian imports did increase to a total of 8.7 billion, which equated to less than 2% of Russia's total exports in 2021. So as we can see from this analysis, prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there was not a strong trading relationship between the two countries. Russia equated to less than 1% of all of India's exports, and India equated to less than 2% of all of Russia's exports. But if we look at this chart, you can see that things have changed dramatically over the course of the last 7 months. India has taken full advantage of the large discounts that Russia have been offering on the export of oil. And it's reported that in August, India purchased around $4 billion worth of oil. And that monthly figure equates to almost 50% of the total trade that was done between the two countries in the whole of 2021. So the current situation obviously works well for both India and Russia. India is able to find large quantities of oil at a discount price, and Russia's able to find a market for all of its oil production. But the situation with regards to the purchase of oil at the moment doesn't really reflect the long-term position. As it stands right now, a lot of countries in Europe are still buying oil because it's been very difficult for all of the countries to be able to switch their supply chains. Some of the countries are landlocked. A lot of them receive delivery of oil via pipelines. And that oil is essential to the economies of all of those countries. So the EU has actually been working its way through a transition period. And the 5th of February is the date when all European countries will stop buying refined products from Russia. So as it sits right now, the West can't impose any secondary sanctions on other countries for buying Russian oil because they're still buying it themselves. But as soon as we get to those dates, as soon as we pass the 5th of February 2023, the embargo will be in place. None of the European countries, apart from the ones that have exemptions like Hungary and Slovakia, will be buying any more Russian oil. And at that point, the secondary sanctions will start to be put into effect. So over the course of the next few months, it's likely that the oil trade between Russia and India will continue at high levels because Russia needs to keep those volumes moving. But as soon as we hit February 2023, it's likely that the screws will start to be turned on India, the secondary sanctions will be imposed, and the big question is, what will India do at that point? Will it want to keep buying that cheap oil, or will it go for the oil price cap? Because that potentially offers the best of both worlds to India. And we'll come on to that later in this video. One of the problems that India faces when dealing with international trade is that the Indian rupee is not a fully recognized international currency. So a lot of counterparty companies and countries don't want to do deals in rupees. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, from a global perspective, it doesn't have the same level of attraction as something like the US dollar. The US dollar is universally recognized. Everybody is happy taking payments in dollars, holding cash in dollars, and agreeing contracts in dollars because everybody's got confidence and faith in the long-term value of the dollar. Currencies such as the Indian rupee, firstly, don't have the same level of liquidity, so not every country in the world trades in rupees, and secondly, tend to be a lot more volatile in terms of their exchange rate movements. And the last thing that you want to do is agree a contract in a currency which is devaluing, because it means that when you get paid, the actual amount of currency that you get may be less than you thought you'd get when you first put the contract into place. So as a result of this dynamic, the international deals that Indian companies are putting in place with foreign counterparts are usually benchmarked either in US dollars, Japanese yen, or euros. So historically, when India is dealing with Russia to talk about large quantities of oil being delivered, they will agree a price in US dollars. And that obviously represents an issue from the Indian company's perspective, because they need to have US dollars to be able to settle that payment. Now, from Russia's perspective, historically, they'd been happy to agree these contracts in dollars because it is universally recognized. But because of the sanctions that are now being applied against Russia, Russia now wants to move away from accepting dollars and to do deals in Russian rubles. And as I'm sure you're aware if you follow the channel, one of the things that President Putin did at the start of this war was stipulated to all of the European countries that if they wanted to keep receiving gas supplies, they had to make all of their future payments in Russian rubles rather than euros or dollars. Now, some countries refused to do that, such as Poland and Finland, and they had their supplies cut off immediately. Other countries such as Germany and Italy, who needed to keep that gas flowing, had to agree to these terms and conditions. So they've been paying Russia in rubles over the course of the last 6 months or so. And there's a couple of reasons why Russia is wanting to establish the ruble. Firstly, it wants to break the dominance of the dollar globally. It wants to break that relationship between oil and dollars, the petrodollar as it's called. They would like to have the petroruble instead of the petrodollar. And secondly, going forward, Russia wants to do a lot of deals directly with countries like India and China. And so it doesn't want to convert its currency back into US dollars, because it won't have any need for US dollars, because it's unlikely that Russia and America will be doing any trade going forward. So it would seem that the perfect solution here would be for India and Russia to agree to do trade directly in their own currencies rather than having a third-party benchmark. Back in July, the Indian Central Bank announced that it was setting up a trade settlement system to allow overseas entities to settle international trade transactions directly in rupees. Now, initially, that might sound like an obvious thing to do, that if you're doing business with India, you would want to pay them in rupees. But the way that international trade works at the moment, a lot of the major contracts are actually designated in dollars or euros or Japanese yen. And that means that if you're an Indian importer paying for overseas goods, then you will need to buy those currencies to settle those deals. And this is the way large international trade transactions take place in many countries around the world. Now, one of the biggest problems that most countries are encountering right now is that the US dollar is trading at very high levels. And therefore, if you're designating all of your contracts in US dollars, it means that in addition to the overall price rises, the exchange rate movement is also adding more cost. So a movement away from this existing system of using US dollars as the benchmark currency towards dealing directly in rupees would offer potential benefits to India in terms of doing trade with countries such as Russia. Now, in terms of the details of how this new system would operate, if you're a company in Russia, such as Gazprom, that exports large amounts of gas, you would need to set up what's called a Vostro account with a bank in India. And that Vostro account would be denominated in Indian rupees. Now, as you'll be perfectly aware if you've watched my videos before, I don't like jargon. I don't like people who say things that you don't understand without giving you a full explanation. So I wanted to take a moment here to talk about Nostro and Vostro accounts. And that's how I pronounce it. You may hear it different, but it's tomato, tomato, potato, potato.
What's the difference between Nostro and Vostro accounts? Nostro and Vostro are Italian terms that describe the same bank account. They're used when one bank has another bank's money on deposit. Suppose Bank A uses Nostro account to refer to its account that's held by Bank B. Nostro means our, so Nostro account is a shorthand way for Bank A to say our money that is on deposit at your bank. Bank B refers to Bank A's account, which Bank B holds, as a Vostro account. Vostro means your, so Vostro account is a way for Bank B to say your money that is on deposit at our bank. A Vostro account can belong to a company or an individual. Banks in the United Kingdom and the United States often hold a Vostro account on behalf of a foreign bank. This account is held in the currency of the country where money is on deposit. A Nostro account is the record of the bank whose money is at another bank. These accounts are often used to simplify trade and foreign exchange transactions.
Gazprom would put in place a contract that would have an agreed exchange rate between the Russian ruble and the Indian rupee. And if Gazprom then supplies 10 million rupees worth of gas to its counterpart, the Vostro bank account in Gazprom's name held in India would then be credited with 10 million rupees. So the benefit to both Gazprom and the Indian counterparty is that they're not having to benchmark anything against the US dollar, and therefore movements in the value of the US dollar are entirely irrelevant. So this arrangement should help to promote more trade between the two countries directly, and it would also have a number of other added benefits. Firstly, it would encourage the rupee and the ruble to be seen as international currencies that other countries could then be interested in trading in. Secondly, it would allow Russian businesses to build up a supply of Indian rupees, which they could then use to pay for imports directly from India. And thirdly, in terms of international relations, having a supply of rupees may also encourage the Russian authorities to start considering making investments directly into India. So it would strengthen the relationship between the two countries on a longer term basis. So in theory, all of this sounds great from Russia's perspective, because as you'll know if you follow the channel, Russia is desperate to increase the amount of trade that it's doing with both India and China to replace all of the trade that it's losing from the West. However, despite this system having been set up a number of months ago, it's now been reported that all of the major financial institutions in India have not been utilising this system and in fact have been deliberately avoiding it because of the risk of potential sanctions. An Indian diplomat in Russia said Russian banks had reached out to 8 large Indian counterparts to set up rupee trade settlements, but the Indian banks had not responded. Some of these banks include India's largest lender, State Bank of India, Punjab National Bank, Bank of India, Bank of Baroda, and Central Bank of India. A senior executive at a large state-owned bank said using such a settlement mechanism could be a violation of some sanction rules. The Western nations can impose a sanction on us, which will be a major business and reputational loss. Indian banks continue to settle trade with non-sanctioned Russian entities in dollars or euros, but sources believe that settlements in rupees could come under greater scrutiny. In addition to the sanctions, another banker said that the lack of liquidity in the ruble made it difficult to determine an accurate rupee-ruble exchange rate, and went on to question what Russian banks would do with a pool of rupees sitting in an account in India. As Indian banks do not have large ruble reserves and therefore could not offer a direct currency exchange. Now, this is a really interesting development because the Indian Central Bank has put this system into place to encourage more trade between Russia and India directly and to try to avoid the problems that a strong US dollar is causing for all of that trade. But despite the system having been set up and approved, the Indian banks don't want to run the risk of potentially being hit with secondary sanctions and therefore haven't even responded to the Russian counterparts in terms of setting up these accounts. Now, we've discussed the issue of secondary sanctions a number of times on the channel, and the longer that the war in Ukraine goes on, the more likely it is that the West will apply more pressure on both India and China to restrict the amount of business that they're doing with Russia. Now, as it stands at the moment, there are no formal sanctions on Russian oil. The EU is still buying oil directly from Russia, and therefore it's free to trade for everybody around the world. But as the EU starts to move away from those purchases, it's likely that more pressure will be applied on India and China, and the oil price cap that's been tabled is likely to be implemented at some point in early 2023. And that oil price cap will be designed to limit the amount of revenue that Russia can earn from the sale of oil to overseas countries. And the way that it will be operated is that there will be a restriction in terms of shipping and insurance and brokerage that applies to the movement of all Russian oil. So if you're a buyer of Russian oil, you can only get the insurance and all the associated things you need to make that movement safely if Russia agrees to sell it below a certain level. Now, the only way that that price cap will really be effective is if India and China sign up to the terms and conditions and therefore force Russia to have to accept those lower prices. And the fact that the Indian banks are currently nervous about Western sanctions being applied show that secondary sanctions do work. So there is a possibility that the oil price cap and the secondary sanctions could start having a much bigger impact as we move through into 2023. And that's a major concern for Russia, because the number one plan for Russia at the moment is to try to replace all of the lost business from the West with India and China. But if these secondary sanctions are effective and it cuts off those channels, then Russia is in serious trouble. And it's likely that we will see a much greater reduction in Russia's economic output in 2023. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because there's a lot of talk about Russia being able to replace all of the trade that it's going to lose from the Western sanctions with more trade from India and China. And India, I think, is a really interesting case study here because India is not connected to Russia. There is no land border between the two countries. So any exports that go from Russia to India will need to go over the sea, or theoretically, Russia could build a massive pipeline. So it's a slightly different situation to China, which obviously does have a land border with Russia, albeit both countries are absolutely massive, and the population of China is spread over a vast area. So I don't think it's possible for Russia to be able to pipe all of its oil and gas directly to all of the population. And if it was going to do that, it would need to invest an enormous amount of money to build those pipelines. But Russia has identified India as one of its target markets. And this makes absolute sense just in terms of the sheer volume of people who live there and the purchasing power that India has. And because India has to buy in large amounts of its energy, it potentially could represent a fantastic relationship for the two countries. And as I showed you earlier, since the start of the Ukraine war, the level of purchases from India has gone up dramatically because over that time, it's been able to pick up large amounts of oil at a discount price. So this is a fantastic deal for India. And it seems crazy that a lot of those deals are being struck in US dollars when the US is not involved in any of that arrangement. So it seems logical that you would set up a trading relationship between the two countries so that they could agree their deals in rupees and rubles. So the Indian Central Bank has put the mechanisms in place to achieve this. But I think it's really fascinating that the big banks in India have not taken up this offer. There's been very little trade that's been agreed on this basis. And the primary reason for that is that all of the companies involved are concerned that they will become subject to the sanctions. The financial sanctions that are in place are very clear, and they can track what business is being done. And the bank's interpretation of those sanctions is that by doing these trades directly with Russia, then they potentially could expose themselves and could lose significant business as a result of this. And I think this really proves that the secondary sanctions are a very genuine threat. India is currently not breaking any of the rules by buying large amounts of oil. As I mentioned earlier, European countries are still buying that oil as well. So they're not in a position to be able to enforce secondary sanctions on anybody else because they're still benefiting from all of this Russian oil. But as soon as we get to the point where the European countries have cut off those supplies, then the world is going to change. So I'm sure that India will make the most of it over the course of the next few months. But when we get to February 2023, we will see an entirely new environment because pressure will be applied on both India and China to stop those purchases. And we can see directly from the response of the Indian banks towards this rupee ruble deal that the sanctions are a big threat and that India is worried about it. Now, if you're sitting watching this in India, you may be thinking that these sanctions are unfair and it's going to mean that India is going to have to pay more for its oil than it would do in normal circumstances. But the West has come up with this concept of a price cap for Russian oil, which would enable the West to still enforce the sanctions against Russia by limiting the amount of revenue that they're able to earn on that oil, but would still benefit all of the buyers because the price would be set below market rates. And this oil price cap has been designed to specifically appeal to India and China. And if India and China agree to this concept, Russia really won't have many options. As I've mentioned a number of times before, Russia needs to keep the production on its oil facilities high. It needs to keep drawing that oil out of the ground. Otherwise, it'll be creating major problems for itself over the long term. But it doesn't have anywhere to store that oil, so it needs to sell it to somebody. Now, the West is not prepared to buy it, but it's happy for India and China to keep taking those volumes as long as it's at an agreed level so that Russia isn't making a huge amount of profit and therefore being able to fund the war. So on paper, this represents the best of both worlds for everybody apart from Russia. Now, Russia have come out against this cap. They're obviously not keen on it. And they've said that in the event that the cap is enforced, they will cut down all of their production, which will lead to a global shortage in oil and push prices above $200. So they're trying to blackmail the world. They're trying to say, if you try to force us into this cap, we will blow oil prices sky high and cause a whole world to go into a major depression. Now, there are a couple of questions around that. Firstly, would Russia do that? Because they would definitely be cutting their nose off to spite their face, because they would be causing significant damage to their own oil industry in the long term. And they would also have a massive hit in terms of the loss of revenue. And then secondly, what would the response be from the rest of the world? Because OPEC Plus, which I touched upon on a recent video, is a consortium of 23 nations, all of whom produce oil. And they have regular meetings to decide upon how much oil they're going to produce in order to try to regulate prices. So if Russia did come out and say, actually, we're not going to produce anything, OPEC Plus has the opportunity of saying, well, we could increase our production and therefore balance off demand and supply in the market. And that would mean that prices wouldn't go to $200 because we could just release more oil and that would bring prices back down. And this is similar to what the USA has been doing recently with its Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's been releasing some of those reserves into the international markets to try to stabilize prices. So when you look at it in those terms, I don't think Russia's threat to destroy the global markets would actually work. Russia only supplies around 10% of the total export markets. So it's not dominant, it's a small percentage. And that percentage could easily be offset if some of the OPEC Plus nations released more oil. So I think the overall takeaway from today's video is that the trade between Russia and India is increasing significantly at the moment. It's mostly going one way, it's mostly exports from Russia to India of oil. And I think that situation will definitely continue over the course of the next few months. But the key turning point in this discussion is really when all of the European countries stop buying Russian oil. That's the point when the secondary sanctions will be applied, and that's when we'll get to a really interesting point in the Russian oil price cap discussion. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments on this topic and others. If you've liked what I've said today, if you thought it was interesting, thought-provoking and educational, please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.